Yeah, half hour here, half hour there. All right, make lunch reservation about 2:30, and we'll be out of here. But this, I don't know if anybody's been up here, but this is the scariest spot you can ever be. Because this is God's. This isn't a podium. This is God's voice. This is God's platform. And he has done some amazing things. And I was wondering, the pastor has a nice outline. He calls it here, this is your life. Here's my life. And I was, going through it and how we're going to do this. but then God throws a couple things in throughout the week. And yesterday he threw this one in. And this morning he changed it where I was going to use it. Yesterday he threw it at me. This morning he changed where I was going to use it. I'm going to start with it. Yes, I believe in God. This is from Jesus Freaks. She was 17 years old. He stood glaring at her, his weapon before her face. Do you believe in God? She paused. It was a life or death question. Yes, I believe in God. Executioner, why? Asked the executioner. But he never gave her the chance to respond. A teenage girl lay dead at his feet. This scene could have happened in Roman Colosseum. It could have happened in Middle Ages. And it could have happened in a number of countries around the world today. People are being imprisoned, tortured, and killed every day because they refuse to deny the name of Jesus Christ. This particular story, though, did not happen in ancient times, nor Vietnam, Pakistan, or Romania. It happened in Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, April 20th. 1999. Do you believe in Jesus? Why? And I was like, April 20th. See, this word God, when I read it this morning, it was like April 20th. It's only 2 days ago on a Friday or whatever. But 1999, and I was like, wow. Because in my life, we're going to get to that. Why Jesus? Had a couple notes and I used them. Family. Had a mom and dad, have an older sister and an older sister, have two older sisters, me, and then I have a younger brother that passed away at 52 back in 2010. I have an older sister. My mom's still alive. She's 92. She's in Florida. I have a stepdad that's 94. He's down there. He's going through dementia and stuff right now. That just happened in the last, I got a phone call on a Monday. He fell in the driveway. He had a blood, some kind of thing in his head, passed out, boom, and that's what caused everything to kick in. But we lived up in Hopewell. Our backyard had a cement pond. We had our own built-in swimming pool that my dad built. He built 11 houses where we were, right? He built them. He was a contractor, a rough man. He was in the Navy. He had tattoos here. I can't remember what they were. He died at 50 years old. Back in 1976, a couple months after we were married. But he had a couple tattoos here. And what God said during the week, remember his arms? He had arms, and they were like Popeye arms. That's what I remember of them. They were Popeye arms. But never knew, like, Dad, I need you to go smack that guy. Boom, he would do that. That's what I believe. My dad was a contractor. He had a contracting business, built 11 houses. Then got out of it. Had a partner at the time. They got out of it, and he bought a bar. He bought a gin mill down in down on Olden Avenue in Trenton, in Greenwood Avenue. It's not there anymore. It's a parking lot, I think, or a part of the alley. But I remember going there. Not hanging out at the bar. Yeah, we did not hang out inside. I was probably 7, 8 years old, something like that. He had it billed that he had the biggest go-go dancer in Trenton. She was like 400 pounds. I remember that. My uncle, if my cousin Jeannie was here, my uncle tended bar for him. He flagged my dad because that's how bad he got with drinking. But he flagged him in his own joint and cost him a lot of money because he took out all the money and went across the street, took everybody with him, and bought him drinks all night. And that was a story that I remember, we walk in there on a Saturday afternoon. We went out hunting one time. This is why I love my dad so much, is we spent some time together. I would ride on the machine when he was grading and stuff like that. But we walked in there one day after hunting, and a guy was giving my uncle a bunch of crap to, you know, because he was all juiced up. And then all of a sudden, I look, where's my dad? And poof, this guy disappeared off the stool, and he threw him out the front door. And then that was constant. We were in the back one time. We heard rustling. We sneak out there. There he is under a stack of guys, and he sees us and goes, get back in that kitchen. By the time we got back to the kitchen, he was there. Don't you ever come out there again. All we heard was bodies thrown. But that was his life. I don't know why he got a bar. I wanted to call my mom this week and ask her, why did he buy a bar? I don't understand why. I never got the chance to ask him that because he died at 50. I was 21, 22. But there was a lot of things I'd ask him now. Sometimes I ride by and I hate him because I wanted to be in the contracting business. I didn't want a bar. He goes, you want a bar? No way. He sold that baby like when back in the 60s. But I didn't want to be that. I wanted to be a contractor. I wanted to run machines. I wanted to drive trucks. I drove him home when he was loaded at 15. I think 15, 16, I could drive him home with the trailer and the machine on it. Now, this is from Ewing to Hopewell. But back in the day, you could do that. You know, it was all the back roads. There was no cops on it. The township cops, they didn't even have. The stateies took care of them. I remember one night he fell out of the door of the truck because it was all loaded, fell out. Truck hit a friend of mine's house, guy I went to school with. We picked him up that night. But it was fun times. It was fun times. We went to school at Hopewell Valley. It was a, you know, farmer school at the time, not now. Today it's Hopewell, you know. When we had it, it was like Hopewell. Oh, you go up there? Like, you live in the woods. That's what our relatives, you live in the woods. But we would have parties. We had parties. You talk about parties. My dad had a bar, number one, so we had kegs. We didn't do bottles. We did kegs. And they started at 12 o'clock on Sunday and it maybe on Monday morning sometime. But he would just go to bed, and my mom would be there. My uncle Elwood, which is Jeannie's dad, he played guitar all day long and night, you know. We'd have some awesome picnics. Then the Mercer County crew would come over during the day and kill the rest of the keg. We'd have county trucks. We got our driveway was blacktopped one day. You know, went to school, come home, and the driveway's blacktopped, you know. So, but that was done with the kegs, you know, basically. So that was my life as a kid growing up. Was it tough? Yeah, when he got older, you know, like I said, picking him up out of the street. We towed the truck home. It had to bust it up. We did some crazy things. I was in the truck one night. He was all juiced up. They changed the belt, and the belt blew, and he broke. And as he was putting it back on, the fuel line broke, and then we started it up. We went back in the truck, and the guy lit a match, and boom, here we are blown out in the truck. This is 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm 10. I would miss school. Not miss school on purpose. He'd go, hey, you're going to work today. You're going to learn school. You're going to learn how to dig. So I'd do that. But that day, he was like, the guy, we're driving in another truck home, and he's going, I can't understand that. What do you mean you can't understand it? Yeah, gas there, you lit a match, and it blew up. He goes, yeah, but I used a safety match. I thought my old man was going to kill him. This guy was like this tall, you know. But that was, now I grow up with that, you know. So how was my our vocation? Let me go on to that. So he dies. We just got married. I was working at a parts counter in a truck garage. Remember John? And John would come in, and we'd just have a great time. But I sold. I sold parts. I sold trucks. I sold cars. I sold, you name it, I sold it. Could I sell anything? I don't know. I guess I could, you know. If I had a pencil, would you want to buy it? Yeah, how much would you be willing to pay for it? A dollar. Okay, you bought it, you know. Just stuff like that. But that's sales, you know. So that's what I did. I sold cars. I was up in Flemington, sold cars, and I sold trucks, Class 8s. That's how I met John, over-the-road trucks. I sold those for 5 years. Hobbies, I like motorcycles. Did I have one? Yeah. Did I have a couple? Yes. I bought one, and then one day, me and my brother-in-law said, come on, let's go buy new ones. You know. So we went over and we bought new Kawasaki's. He bought a 650, I bought a 1,000. Okay. We were married a couple years, had babies. She was pregnant when I first got it. So she couldn't ride on, so we ride around, boom, boom, boom. And then a couple years go by, and we got the kids, and they're probably 3 years old, I think, at the time.
No, they were 18 months.
Okay, they were young. So we're married 5 years. I was working out of Kenworth, selling parts, I think, at the time. So I went to guys after work, right, at a local pub over on Whitehead Road that ain't there anymore, and I was drinking them up. We had a great time. That night, I chose to go to my mother-in-law's, and for, you know, our wedding anniversary, 5 years we were married. It was April 5th, or May 15th. April 15th is another bad day. But May 15th was an awesome day. But that day, it wasn't so awesome, because I was doing 90 miles an hour, going down a road, trying to make this turn, and got into the turn. This is the second time I tried it, because I wasn't fast enough the first time. So the second time, I'm going, and I was like, uh-oh, I ain't going to make this turn. So we stand it up, and we hit the brakes. By the time I got it down, it was 70 miles an hour. I come down, and the last thing I remember, I slingshot off the bike. A guy passing by or on his front lawn or whatever, there's how God's hand works in my life, or works in your life, is even before I was a believer. Couldn't stop the tree from being there. I guess I went in between them. I don't know. But I was laying there, and it landed on that. Right here on the back, like, bam, and busted all 12 ribs from the spine, multiple fractured 9 of them, damaged lung, so I was in the hospital 22 days, but she gets a call at her mom's house. It's funny now. No, it's not funny. I could imagine her face. I'll kill that sucker. If he ain't dead by the time I get there, he will be. But get a call at your mom, say, you know, he's all smacked up. He's over at Princeton Hospital, you know. But she hung in there. Gosh, did she hang in there? It was a tough 22 days. My mom walked in, she walked out. She said, that's it. She walked out. And she came back. So life before Christ. That was my life before Christ. Rough, tough. Crutchley parties hardy. We party. We love the party. We are the party. If we come, by the end of the night, we're going to be dancing on the tables. We're going to do whatever we want because we're all loaded up. That's just the Crutchley thing, you know. So I grew up in that all my life. My uncle drank. My dad drank. My other uncle died. But they all died at 50 years old. They all smoke and drank. So it does cut your life short. Yes, it does. I know that for a fact. You know, because my dad died at 50, my brother died at 52, smoked, drank like an animal. My uncle, my other uncle, my other nephew, my cousin, they all died. So, but I knew I had a drinking problem. I said I just couldn't figure it out, you know, because when I start, I start. And when I stopped is when I just couldn't go anymore. It was not like I had two and stopped. Or had one and stopped. I always said to myself, I'm doing this wrong. If I could just do this right, I would get this down. But I could never do it right. I always did it wrong. So I quit smoking. Or quit drinking, sorry. Quit drinking. And was I a miserable dry drunk? Probably.
Yes.
Probably. God? God? So let's go on to religion.
How religious were you?
How religious was I? I believed in God, definitely did, you know. Why? I was a Catholic, or I was a Catholic religion, grown up. We had an orphanage in Hopewell at the time. That's where I went to catechism classes, is what we called them. You know, dating, they changed the wording to make it a little bit more friendly, I think. But we went to that orphanage, and there was kids there, and boom, and I had a heart for them. My sister had a heart for them. My dad, big burly guy, but he had a heart for kids, you know. He had a heart for people, too. And that's probably what, you know, you could always see that in my dad. Like, he'd pick up these guys, and we'd take them to work for a day. And one guy who just got out of the bar, and we'd pick him up, and he's like, ooh, dude, man, breathe that way, you know. And you stick a shovel in 400-degree blacktop when you're hungover. Ooh, what's going to happen, Shane? Ooh, man, everything's coming up. So, but that's what we live with. But religious background with growing up, the stages of the cross is always in the glass, the stained windows. And I looked at that stuff and boom, that really meant something to me. It was touching, I didn't know what it all meant because they didn't tell you what it meant, Jesus was a cool dude. I mean, he took a lot, but that's all I knew, that he was in the stages of the cross. That's all I know it was. Purgatory and stuff like that, I didn't even care. I got done what I was supposed to do because my mom's full-bred Italian. So you were going to be a Catholic. You are Catholic, we are Catholic, So, and Bud, that was my dad's nickname, Bud. Bud, they're going to Catholic too. Okay, cool. My dad converted to be, he was, what the heck was he? Episcopalian. So he converted to be a Catholic when they got married. Now, one neat fact about my dad. I got to tell you this one. Things are going to come in out like that. My dad went and got married. When they got married, he went and took dance classes where he could dance with his wife on the wedding day. He was round. He was round and short. Okay? But he was like Fred Flintstone on the dance floor. I'm telling you, he was like Twinkle Toes Bud, we used to call him. So that's a neat fact, isn't it? That's pretty cool. All right, get back on the religion. Okay. Let's keep this serious. Oh, did you need these sermon notes? You don't need these. What? I don't even know what that idiot's saying up there. So we throw those away. So religious, yes. Did I believe in God? Yeah. Did I pray to God? Yes. When I really needed him? I can't even go down that road. Things are really bad, and then you're like, God, I hope this isn't true, that she's pregnant or whatever, And this in, whoo, cool, God. Mark one up for the big guy. But then there was life leading up to Jesus. Life leading up. I was, my brother-in-law's here. Rich, and my sister-in-law, Linda, my mother-in-law, mom, that's what she is. She was mom and dad. Mom, we got married in a Baptist church. I guess, I don't know why they did. Maybe I paid them. I don't know. But after that, I took a job selling cars up in Flemington. And I love selling cars. Man, it was cool. I have this little motto, what we learned in the car business. First one speaks, loses. What that is, that's very important if you're in sales. Because the first one speaks is going to cost you money. So you go to somebody and you go, hey, I got this car. It's got power windows, door locks, tilt, cruise, glass. It's got everything. No, we can't use that one, Rick. It's got everything. And it's $1,595. And the power of first one speaks loses is the customer goes, I think that price is too high. Well, what did you have in mind? Because if you were the one that goes 15.5 and you go, what did you think of that price? I think it's too high. So the first one speaks loses. So if you get him to go, I think that price is too high. Well, what did you have in mind? Oh, maybe 15.4. Nope, we can't do that. That's an unrealistic offer. But that's where those little things come in. So now you're back in the day. Today it's totally different. You can buy a car online and know the cost and all that. There was a game. It was fun. It was the customer against us, and us against the customer. Not in a bad way because they have a pretty good rap. You made good money because you wanted to make money. That's what we're there for. But we offered them service to go along with the sale. So. But in that, I worked with three Christians. One guy named Rob, one other guy named Jeff Randolph. I couldn't think of his last name this morning. And another guy, H.B. Lee Hollingsworth. They were all believers. And their believer buddies would come in and they'd do the Christian hug, and the kiss. And then me and another guy, we'd do the Christian hug and then grab for the wallets, making fun of them. And they'd laugh. Rob is a big burly guy, and he'd laugh. And we go on a road test, and he'd put these Christian tapes in. Listen to this. This is Mylon Lefebvre, and this is DC, not DC Talk, it was Petra, and stuff like that. And I go, oh, yeah, cool, you know, we do a road test on an appraisal or stuff like that. So here I worked with these three guys. And this is in January of 1990. I was getting these, like, thoughts. And you see the commercial for the Dianetics book on TV. And I go, you know, I think I want to get that book and read that. And Rob at work's going, you don't need that book. You need the Bible. It's like, yeah, okay, Rob. So, and then I look at that commercial. And then at that time, my brother-in-law Richard and my sister-in-law, Lynn, they were taking my boys to a Calvary Baptist church up in Hopewell. And that's cool. And then they would come back, and in the afternoon, Sunday afternoon or whatever, they go, my sister-in-law said this. She go, we went to a church right around the corner, that Faith Baptist. She goes, you might like that pastor. I go, okay, yeah, cool. This is probably somewhere in like February or whatever. I was like, all right, cool. Now, this is every night. Now, let me go through like my day. I work Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 55 hours a week. We're pressured from the minute you hit the door to the minute you left home, you know. I don't know if anybody is in sales, but car sales, you're under the gun. How many numbers you're going to put on the board? They ask you in the middle, in the beginning of the month, how many cars you're going to sell this month? I don't know. My crystal ball's out, you know. But what a stupid question to ask. But all right, 20, you know. Well, I always hit numbers anyway. I hit numbers, not only that, but then guys say, oh, I sell more cars than you. Okay, you want to match profit per profit? They go, no. Okay, all right, cool. So then I do that every day and then come home and I'd blow a joint on the way home. I worked in Flemington, 45 minutes to get home. By the time I was home, I was just perfect. I was perfect. I'd munch out like a banana, like crazy, and then go to bed and get up the next day, do the whole thing over again. Wore a tie, wore shoes, man, and I was like, that's it. You gotta look good, because I am playing great. I'm like, great, there we are. So, we are waiting. So, every day coming home, blow off a joint by the time I get home, boom, boom, boom. And go, wow, okay, and do the next thing the next day, the next thing the next day. But my job also is what I had fun at doing, is busting everybody's stones. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed not only the people I worked for, but more and more the management. Because they were like, oh, I want to just... Because they just had this like, here we go, that guy's a buyer. And he'd be looking at the guy standing out in the parking lot. Okay, what do you got, a crystal ball or something? Get it back in the office. You know, leave me alone. And you can understand what you getting a little challenged. The only thing that saved me is I put numbers on the board. As long as you made money, they didn't bother you. You didn't make money, they were going to come down on you. So that's pressure. You're dealing with that pressure all the time. So one day, after my sister-in-law mentions this, and the guys at work and all that, and I get up one Sunday morning, shake her, come on, let's go. Where are we going? We're going to that church over your sister and brother-in-law. We're going. Okay. So we go. We go that day, and we come home. No, it was cool. Next week, come on, let's go again. We're walking up on the steps in the back, and there's this dude sitting back there, and I go, John, Rick, he goes, Rich, because that's what he knew me as. He goes, Rich, what are you doing? I go, we're here to church. Oh, cool. He goes, how old are your kids? And I introduced some kids and my wife. Oh, I'd be your Sunday school teacher. All right, cool. We'll be here early next week. Oh, what time's that? All right, we'll have them here. Okay. So we go into church that day. And then we come out. Next week we get early. Now we're early. Now we go to Sunday school, drop the kids off, and we go to some Sunday school class, and boom, boom, boom. We're there. And then the pastor, we're going in the sermon. And in the sermon, he goes, I forget what he talked on, but I remember how he closed it. He goes, did you ever teach your kids to steal cookies out of the cookie jar? He goes, they walk in there. Got to take the lid off without it hitting the side. Because even though they're in the living room, you're in the living room, if that lid hits the side of the jar, they'll know that you're in there getting a cookie, right, Jason? And they go, and I was sitting there, I go, dude, that's me. So he's going on. He goes, then you got to get it out. And then you put the lid back on and take the cookie and you go in your room and you eat it. And then you come back. And I was like, wow, he's describing me. I'm that guy. He goes, and what caused you to do that? It's your nature, your sin nature. And I was like, dude, that's me. Then he gave an invitation afterwards, and I'm sitting there, and he's like, and I'm saying it, but not saying it. Deep inside, I'm saying it. So that afternoon, I go home and I got pot and stuff that I would really roll up a bone by the last two weekends before, and I'd be done by quarter after 12, and I'd be mellow for the afternoon. This day, I'm taking the stuff and throwing it away and going, what am I doing? Couldn't understand it, but I'm throwing it away. It's like, wow, that's weird. Now I can't wait to get into work to talk to Rob. And that day, I was... I finally get probably like 11 o'clock or so, and I go, Rob, I don't know. I can't live by all that stuff. I can't live by that Christian stuff. He's going, yeah, well, you know, it's but you know, going through all the Christianese answers, I call them. You know, you've been saved by grace and repentance and all that, and turn around and all that. Well, this other guy, Jeff Randolph, he was like me. We were Rockheads. They used to call me Johnny Rock, Johnny Rockhead. Because, you know, they tell you it's yellow. It's not yellow. It's freaking orange. It'll always be orange. You're lying to me. But this day, he walked by and he's going, Rob, what are you doing? Dude, you're just saved. Done. End of story. And when he said it was like, boom. It was that clear. I'm saved. I couldn't wait. They have this Easter program on Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. So Saturday, I couldn't wait to go. I heard so much about the program, and I wanted to raise my hand and say, I know Jesus. So we went that night, and I raised my hand. I know Jesus. That was Easter weekend. The day I got saved was April 8th, 1990. So it's awesome the way God works, you know, with the dates, April 20th for that girl. Earth Day. I don't know what that's got to do with anything, Rick. But... April 8th, 1990 is when I got saved, Palm Sunday. But then I always go, where would I be on that Palm Sunday? I'd be laying the branches down, but where would I be on Friday? Where would I be on Friday? But that's where I come into knowing Jesus, accepting him then. And then I worked hard. I did a lot of works at that church. We did Awana. I drove the van down into the city of Trenton. I hit a car, which God took care of that. Nobody got hurt. I had 22 kids on a van that holds 15. They said, you got to stop doing that. I go, I can't do that. If you can come and you let that little kid stay on the curb while I drive away, that's on you. But I am not driving off of that curb while one kid wants to go to Awana or VBS. That's the first thing I did for 2 weeks. I drove at VBS. Two full weeks. I'd rush home, shower. I got into a business, got out of the car business because it took all my time. I wanted to serve Jesus, so I got a business. I started a paint repair business, boom, boom, and went down where I could rush home, get a shower, boom, go back. It got to two runs. I make two runs in the city of Trenton, and that was Turpin Alley. That was Center Street, and I forget the other road. But I would run them down. And that's not blowing my own horn. I want to work hard for God. So that's what I did there. And then I did VBS. And then I also did a lend-a-hand ministry, which John and Michelle did also. Right, John? Awesome ministry. We would pick up homeless down at the old soup kitchen across from the train station. We'd done as many as 80, 90, 100 meals on a Sunday. We'd pick them up in the morning, serve them a Danish in the morning. They would have to go to service. This is all leading to something, a real cool story, is they would all have to go to service. Then after service, we'd serve them a meal, and then we'd bus them back. My day started at 7 o'clock and ended at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But that was easy. That was awesome work. God's, when I'm doing God stuff, I don't run out of energy. When I do worldly stuff, I run out of energy. But in that ministry, one time, now you got to take 70 people who are standing in line, and these are like little children. They're fighting over a meal. They are fighting over a meal. Like, you cut in line. You know, that's how you got to be there. Well, a voice. Do you know the still, small voice that they talk about in the Bible? I know that voice. Because God said one day, go check. I was like, all right, we're going to start the meal. Go check. And I was like, well, who is saying that? I go, okay. I don't know who it was, Jen or somebody that's a hand. Take over here. I got to go. Where are you going? I don't know. I got to go. So I go, and I go down the hallway, the downstairs, say this hallway down here. And the lights are shining through, and I could see movement, like in the shadow. And I was like, oh, man. So I go over to the door, and a guy's got a fax machine or whatever at the time. And I go, well, I guess you ain't, no, you can't come anymore. And he put down the thing, walked out. So I walk back into the hall, and they go, where'd you go? I said, I caught a guy stealing a fax machine or something. He put it down. Who is it? I said, I don't know. I look around, I go, I think God took him out in the hallway. I don't know. I don't remember a face. I don't remember him at all. God took him out in the hallway because I didn't see him after that. So do I know God's voice when it speaks? Yes. Have I heard it? Yes. Do I love it? Yes. God's done that a couple other times with different things. But that one, that was actually pretty cool. Because I made a deal with God. I'm going to blow it. I'm going to forget to call drivers. I'm going to forget the food. I'm going to do something. I need help. I'll make sure the food is good and hot. If you can handle all the other things. I call drivers in the morning. Like, I need a driver. When you need it? Today. Okay, no problem. I'll be there. And the food was always good. And then they said, all right, we're going to have to lock all these doors and put locks on. I go, you do that, I'm out. Because God, that's God's stuff. God will protect his stuff. I'll just make sure the food's hot and good. That I can do without messing it up. So that's what, and they said, okay, whatever. I go, you lock them doors, you got the whole thing. You lock them doors, you got the whole thing. We're not putting locks on. God don't need locks. God's got it fully in control. So, and then in that time, when I got saved, I got to listen to radio constantly. This is when they had talk radio, a lot of, instead of the music, which the music is cool, but with the voice or sermons, I got to know the Bible, like, big time. So, that was cool. Oh, is that going long? Oh, man. I got so much more. 2:30? We probably just get out of here.
Keep going, brother.
But then I backslid, got into addictions. That I'll leave as a separate story because that is another stage of my life. Every time I knew when I was backsliding, when it got to the, not backsliding, I went in full board do what Rick wants. Because Rick got a little pissed off at something and he said, I'm out of here. And then Satan said, watch me, God. And God said, go ahead, but don't kill him. I wish God didn't answer that one, but he did. I would rather God killed me because in my addiction, I'd say, God, I can't stop this. I'm going to keep doing it until it kills me. And he didn't. He changed it. That's finally when he said, okay, about time you're out of my way. Now I can really go to work after 5 years. So then God dealt with that. Praise. Well, during that time when I came here, Doug talked about laying hands on a stove. Remember? The stove was smoking. Connie was out. And he goes, I laid over there and laid hands on it. And it's working cool today. And I believe that stuff. I believe what's in the Bible. I believe. Well, this isn't the Bible. But sorry. I believe what's in there. But that's a dude that's a guy I wanted to follow. He's following Jesus. What's he always say? I'm following Jesus. You're following me. Following Jesus. All right, cool. I want to lay on hands stuff. I want to see the lame to walk and the blind to see. I don't believe that they're only biblical times. They are times now. Ed, your heart's fine, dude. Yeah, so you got a little wire problem. They'll straighten that out. But you need a wire because God sent the word. God, you need that wire. That's all. You know, that's the way I look at it. But praise, and I know God deals with things. In cocaine or addiction, sometimes I had to walk for 2 years. Me and Shane, we've been all over the state for 2 years every night. I was in a recovery meeting here. I was in one in Manahawkin on Friday night, one in Manahawkin on Sunday night. We went to all different ones. We blew some people's hairs back, but we came in. Whew, and they were like, whoa, those guys got an addiction. Yeah, I don't know what you guys were talking about, you know. But God said for 2 years, and then finally took that taste and that desire away. I struggle with smoking. A long time, ever since I was a believer. It's I got to stop, you know. I got to stop because you got to be a believer, you know. Or be holier than now. I am not holier than now. I am beat up from the feet up, tore up from the floor up, and I am proud of it that God uses it for his glory. Not my glory, his glory. But I went to the Dominican Republic with John and another brother. And they go, yo, you shouldn't smoke, you know, it's a bad witness. Well, okay, yeah, and I agree not only on the witness part, but I didn't want to smoke because it hurts your body, number one, you know. Not all those boats, you know, it's the temple of the Holy Spirit. Okay, we got it. But God, on that trip, I said, all right, God, and I'm puffing away in the airport and get on a plane, 7 days, come back. We get in a ride home and everybody lights up. And they go, you want to smoke? Nope, I'm not a smoker. And I'm driving to work the next day. Now, I was selling cars again, used cars. And they go, or I'm driving a car, and it was smoked in. And I was like, whew. And I always thought, they always said, don't smoke in the car because it smells like smoke. And I was like, man, you people are wackos, you know. You're one of them that used to smoke or whatever. But I was like, oh, I'm turning into one of those people. Oh, but I could, it was like, man, this does stink. That moment, I knew God took that away. I tried all the time. I had 6 months at one time not smoking. And every time I smelled smoke, I wanted to light up. This time, every time I smell smoke, I don't want to light up, you know? So, does God deal with things and take things away? Yes. Something you got to walk through with him. I'm holding on to his hand. God, get me to this next meeting where I don't do something stupid, you know. So I ended it a little quicker than I wanted to on certain things, but that's where it is. With that girl, when he asked her the question, why do you believe in Jesus? Yes. Why? Because he changed my life. Yeah. He changed my life. These are valuable merch. I'm keeping them. Don't forget to turn it off. Say something nasty.
God is so good, isn't he? I mean, Rick just hit the high points. He didn't even get into some of the stuff. I want Rick and Ginny to greet you at the back, so give them a chance to get back there so you can say hi and just words of encouragement. Yeah, he's got a whole other story, as he mentioned, about the time with the cocaine and how God is... set him free. The bottom line is God has got a second chances. Rick is a living testimony of that. How God kept them together as husband and wife. He didn't get into... They have twin boys, Richard and Rob. And they have a daughter, Rachel. Some of you have met Rachel. But God has certainly worked in their lives. God's grace has been awesome. Let's stand for prayer. We'll be dismissed. Oh, Father, you kept your hand on Rick, even from those moments when he was a kid, growing up in an alcoholic home, to motorcycle accidents, to alcohol, to cocaine. And your grace has been so awesome. Continue to bless he and Jenny. Let them know your provision, your power, blessed them in many ways, body, soul, and spirit. Thank you that we can be together in this place today, Lord. We pray that as we leave here, the awesomeness that we would breathe in your presence, the presence of the Holy Spirit. In the name of Jesus, we thank you. Amen.